Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 25th, 2009, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long. Happy birthday, buddy.
You too, buddy. I'd sing, but I don't want to pay the rights, so...
Yeah, that's right. We'll let Sarasota Kennel Club take care of that.
Wow, a whole year, man. A whole year doing the magazine.
Yeah, you know, we really kind of stretched this whole birthday thing out, you know, because we mentioned it, like, you know, back in July when the company actually started, and then, you know, then we had our birthday issue that came out really in August, and then in September we finally had our party, so, you know, I kind of feel like a share farewell tour here, man.
Yeah, really. It's lasting forever.
But we went down to Sarasota Kennel Club and our good friend, room run by our good friend Sam Mattello on Saturday, had our big birthday party down there. Your wife did a wonderful job picking out the cake for us.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I thought for sure we got this huge cake. I thought for sure I was going to be lugging some of it home or throwing it out. And, you know, we got on the mic and said, listen, even cash game people, you guys can have some cake. You don't have to play in the tournament. It's a celebration. All of a sudden, all these senior citizens. Just, it's like a stampede.
And we're in the middle of a tournament, and finally I'm like, you know what? I don't care. I'm missing a hand. I'm getting one piece of that cake that I paid for.
It was good.
Yeah, it was a good cake.
So.
And it had a nice little picture of our cover of our birthday issue on there. You know, it turned out nice.
Yeah, everything worked out well, and yeah. Had a good time.
And they sang to us and stuff, which was...
That was kind of surreal, wasn't it? The entire place saying happy birthday to us.
You know, at least it didn't truck in the Olive Garden birthday singers, you know, or those folks that shake the little canisters full of forks and crap. Oh, I hate that.
The tournament was good. It was 70 people, a lot more people than it usually gets on that day. So we felt like, you know, we actually contributed to the success of the room. And, you know, we did all right. I went out very close to the bubble, 13th, and they were paying 9. And I made an idiot move. But what are you going to do? We were playing, and I'm still not over this hand. I mean, we were playing 6 hand at that point because there were 7 at their table and 6 at ours, and I'm under the gun +2. So I'm like, I look down at ace-10 suited, and I'm thinking, all right,
it's the mortal nuts.
It's the nuts. It's Cosenza, you know,
the immortal nuts. it's some sort of mortality of nuts.
Some sort of nuts that kill you. But, I figure, well, I only have, like, the 2 blinds and, like, 1 other person to beat here. And I only have, you know, if I raise a normal amount, I would have raised 50% of my stack. So I thought, why don't I just shove, pick up the blinds and the annies. That's a decent amount. It's like 7,500 and or whatever. So I shove. And, of course, the big blind wakes up with 2 aces and I'm out. And I was so close. I played so well. I got lucky once or twice during a tournament. And I literally threw away. Plus, there was a bounty on my head.
Yeah,
and I literally threw away a minimum of $180 with that move, and I just I'm just so sick because I didn't want to raise to like 9,000 or 10,000 and only have 10,000 left. So I thought shove, but now that I think about it, I probably could have just called or folded, and I just never thought about folding when I only had 3 people behind me, and I was the first to enter the pot with ace 10 suited.
Yeah,
I'm just sick of it. I'm sick over it.
Well, you know, you mentioned how lucky you got, and I thought the funniest part of the story is, you know, we were back-to-back on 2 different tables.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when we're at a tournament together, we're all kind of like busting each other's chops a little bit. Of course, you're always busting mine more because I'm always sucking more than you. But I had a brutal beat, and I know no one wants to hear a bad beat story, so I'm not even going to tell it. But I promise you.
It was brutal.
It was a brutal, brutal beat. And so now I'm down. I'm on fumes. I've got like 1 more bet left. And all of a sudden, I turn around and I hear, Cosenza's all in. You had a monster stack. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I look over, and you've got, what, it was ace-jack, right? And you're up against king-king.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm actually going to outlast Cosenza. I'm going to love this. I'm going to retire from poker. This is going to be the last tournament ever. Because I'm just going to love having that over you. And, of course, no, you hit your ace. Boom. And you go on to 13th. And, of course, then I go out with ace-10 on the very next hand.
Well, no, you went out on ace-10 on the very next hand after my huge ace-jack hand. Yeah. Then I played for 2 hours later, and then went out. Yeah, you made it sound like you outlasted me.
No, no, but the point is that I went out with ace-10. I would rather go out with 7-deuce. And I would have folded the ace-10 when I was in the big blind, and I was contractually obligated to put my cards in.
I really do have to get over this. Oh, it's destiny. I have ace-10. I have to play this hand. I have to get over that. And just like Doyle Brunson does, I have to spit on the cards and muck them.
Well, my early departure of the tournament allowed me to jump in another tournament there. And I was out of that fairly quickly, set over set. And then I flopped 2-pair and lost the river straight. Wow. I feel like Joe Louis has punched me in the face like 8 times.
Well, I keep telling you, this is all the variance catching up with you. I mean, a player like you cashing as much as you did a little while ago, it's just unheard of. So now it's catching up with you.
Yeah, variance, schmariance. But, but you know, this variance, as you're calling it, it's continuing. I went and played at the Tampa Bay Downs this week, and our good friend John Lanier, listener to the show, he writes an online column for Annie Up. He was at my table, too, so he can attest to this. Got my hand all in with King-King against 2 players. Not 1, Chris, but 2 with ace-king.
Oh,
two.
Man.
As soon as I flipped the cards, I'm like, I like this. And John was like, you're in a good spot, Scott. And I'm like, yep. Turn an ace.
Oh, my God, 2-outer.
I am a mild manner poker loser, but I let some stuff rip. After that, I wandered around like a homeless guy in the room. Ooh, what happened? So, you know, I called up our good friend, Dr. Frank. He got me in, and he has diagnosed me, Chris, with live online poker syndrome, or LOPS. It's a new disease that's just been developed, and that is where these sick, sick beats that only happen on online games have creeped into live games. I am afflicted with it, and I will plan some kind of charity event here pretty soon to fund my recovery.
I think there is no cure for that, I heard. There's nothing you can really do to cure that one. Well, getting back to the party, though, you know, I'd like to thank Jacksonville's poker room manager. And he's like in charge of all the poker rooms up there because they own two properties up there. And his name's Josh Zuckerman. He drove all the way down from Jacksonville with one of his buds to play. And it was great. You know, he was there, and we ended up playing a little hoe afterward with him and some other people there. Hold'em Omaha and Stud 8 or better, which is like one of the first times I've played. It's the only time I ever played that live here. Obviously, I played in Vegas, but that was great. We had a great time, had a lot of fun, and I got to felt you were there too.
Yes, you did. You did. But, you know, to be honest, the poker room felted all of us, I think. I don't think anybody walked away with money there because, you know, the classic private game rake.
Yeah.
Situation. But yeah, it was fun to play those 3 games. I was glad to get them going, and you know, they're announcing it on the loudspeaker, and we picked up a couple other players that wanted to play too, so, you know, that's kind of the key down here in Florida. I think if you bring a posse in, you can get any game going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a matter of keeping it going after that, so that was a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of a posse, the Annie Up Nation got together this week for the free roll, and I was not there.
Yeah, and your absence was noted, but, you know, I let folks know that you had a good reason for not being there, and one of the... I did have one chuckle in this tournament before I cried, and my one chuckle was I was at a table with a guy named Mr. Money Hugs or something like that, and he was from some foreign country or something, though he spoke English, so, you know, that's cool, and he was all excited because he found the password for the free roll last night on our website, and he asked me how many events I played in, and I was like, well, all of them. And he was impressed. All right, great. But he's like, oh, I'm so glad I found the password because I really need some tournament dollars. To which point, there were 3 or 4 of us in the at the table, oddly at that point, that were actual Antioch Nationals, and we're like, you know, you can't unregister for this tournament, right? He's like, oh, sure I can. I'm like, oh, okay. yeah, good luck with that, Mr. Money Hugs. And he's like, well, what happens if I unregister? I'm like, well, you don't get to play. So good luck with that. And, of course, he was out in the next hand or two.
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
But you like messing with those folks that are in there. And, you know, he was just so unabashed about, you know, how excited he was that he found the password and he's playing with us. And I totally believe the fact that some of us were not excited that he was there just to do our tournament dollars. But you know, we got down, Chris. We were five from the quote-unquote money. And I say quote-unquote money. I know you just say money sans quotes.
Yes.
But I consider it quote money. And I was the short stack, but I wasn't a dire short stack. It wasn't like, you know, I had like four Andes left. I had like 5,000. I could have kind of shut it down and maybe squeaked in.
Right.
So let me ask you, is that what you would have done? Or when you look down at ace 3-4 like I did, would you jam it and just hope to win the pot and then you're guaranteed a seat? Which way do you go?
You know, at first when I saw that you had put this down in the notes, I thought, jam it. Of course, jam it. I mean, I don't care. You're playing to win. And then I thought, oh, wait, you're not really playing to win. You're playing to make the money, quote-unquote.
Yeah,
unquote.
You're just playing to be four more people.
Yeah, so I just can't fool my way in, though. I can't do it. My backbone won't let me do it. So I think I still jam it. Or at least I just call and see what the next card brings. And then, you know, I can't get away from this hand, and I can't. So maybe I don't jam it, but I definitely play it. I don't fold.
Yeah, well, I think at that point calling would have been about 600 in chips, and I had about 5,000. So
yeah, I would have called.
Yeah, but then what happens if you get like a 9 or something on the next card? Then you're committed, right? So you might as well just keep playing, right?
No, I don't know. I don't know if I'm committed. I'm going to wait till that card comes and see what everything else happens. You know, I don't know if somebody else, if the people I'm in the hand with get tens, jacks, kings, and queens, then I'm golden and I'm going to brick. You know, hope they brick again, but. I'm definitely just calling. I'm not jamming there. I'm calling, probably.
All right, well, let me ask you this. If you just call, and you're another player at the table, and you see the short stack just called,
right?
Aren't you going to raise because you know that they're probably not going to be able to call that raise and force them out?
Now you're just like trying to create a situation that's folded. You're not going to do it, Scott. You jammed it. You did okay. You probably should have just called, though.
No, I'm not trying to say I should have folded. I was half of my decision because I actually stopped when I saw that and thought about it, and I'm like, all right, I really should fold my way in, but am I going to hate myself more in the morning for trying to fold my way in this and not getting there?
Right.
Or realizing that I had a super premium hand and didn't try to go for the gusto. If I win that hand, then I've got the seat, you know, because then I can just shut it down.
Yeah.
And I was by far the favorite on those three cards and even four and five cards, and then didn't work out, but
man.
All right. Well, you know, congratulations to the 28 people that did get a seat last night or Wednesday night, and we'll see them and hopefully lots more of you on October 7th for the actual Leafs event. Starts at 9 p.m. Eastern. Always on our good friend PokerStars.com. Password is Antiup. Mr. Moneyhogs probably won't be there, but he does know the password now. And so we'll see you all then. And then, Chris, I had to mention this since we're talking about Raz. Coming up at Daytona Beach Kettle Club down here in Florida, they're doing they call it the Daytona Beach International Poker Tournament. It's taking place early middle of November.
Yeah.
And they've added a Raz event to the lineup.
I was very excited when I saw that on the ad that they ran in our magazine this issue. When I saw Raz, I thought, holy cow.
Yeah.
No one plays Raz here, never mind in a tournament. That's awesome.
It is. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be when you're hopefully out in Vegas following our good friend Kevin Schaefel out there at the main event. And, of course, I've got Packers tickets, so I can't make it either. So it's unfortunate. But you know, if are the folks who are in Florida, you know, and you want to play Raz live, you know, there's an opportunity. You don't get that very often.
That is cool. And you know it's going to be, you know, probably going to be a field of a good mix of people who don't know how to play but want to learn and some who don't know how to play. But if you're a decent player, you got a good shot at winning that thing.
You know, and I tell you, that was what happened last in the free roll, too. I mean, these interlopers, they had no clue how to play Raz.
Right.
And I know people don't like the interlopers in there, but, man, I built my stack up a lot early on with with people, you know, betting full houses and crazy crap like that. So So, yeah, it's definitely a game that if you know what you're doing, you've got a huge, huge advantage over people that don't.
Oh, man. You know, I wanted to let you know, too, that I one of my sources told me this week. Of course, it's a little late for us to announce this part, but High Stakes Poker is coming back, apparently, to GSN for Season 6. They're going to start taping pretty soon. I think they're airing in February. But there's a rumor out there that our good friend, and I say good friend because he is our good friend, AJ Benza, might be replaced by a woman.
Kate Winslet? Because that would be awesome. No offense, AJ.
No,
is there some random woman who's going to lose her job after we interview her on the show? Punky Brewster? That would be cool. No?
No. Apparently, you remember, I don't know if you remember or not, but back when we weren't sure High Stakes was going to come back or not, and,
right.
You know, guys like us literally saved the show by pestering High Stakes.
Let's not say
GSN
guys
people.
Like us. Let's say us. We saved
right.
it.
We saved the show,
Anthony Up saved it, yeah.
So now, the guy that we were targeting was saying that, you know, he wanted to turn the network toward more women, make it more women-friendly.
Right,
blah, blah,
that's
blah.
Right.
So the same guy is pushing, a rumor has it, that the same guy is pushing for a woman to call. This would be just a disaster.
What? Oh, my God. I'm going to shield you here right here, buddy. I mean, you just don't think a woman can do it?
No.
Or are you talking about a particular woman? Or are you saying that it's AJ Benza that makes the show?
Yes. What I'm saying is...
Taking... Right, see, I'm trying to save you here.
Oh,
careful
no.
How you say
it. Of course I don't mean a woman hosting it is a disaster. I mean removing AJ Benza
all right.
Putting some random player, female player, with Gabe Kaplan. I mean, these guys have been together for clearly 5 seasons. They have a fantastic chemistry. They have a bit that they do with The Godfather and Brooklyn and all this other stuff, and we've all come to love that and appreciate it, and that's why the show is so successful. What would be the reason to get rid of AJ Benza? To bring more women in to watch the show? It's the most successful show they have on the damn network.
All right, what if it's Victoria Gotti?
Even so...
They could keep the Godfather references going,
yeah,
right?
But then she wouldn't know poker, you know?
Well, you don't know that.
Whatever.
Have you played with poker, Victoria Gotti?
No, I've only played with...
All right, so don't judge, buddy.
I've only played with John. But but listen, I feel bad, and I think that anybody who wants AJ to stick around, you know, shouldn't let your feelings be heard. I'm going to post something on our forum with the recap, you know, and say, hey, you know, look, you know, this guy's important to us. He's important to our show. And you want to bring a woman on to do the show, that's fine, too. Have, you know, have a third person in there or have
man,
someone...
Not a Troy Kornheiser booth, man. Come on.
I don't know, but I just can't see getting rid of AJ with Gabe. Get rid of Gabe, too, then. If you're going to get rid of them,
okay.
Get rid of both of them and bring in a whole new crew or something. But don't pair Gabe with some random woman that you think is hot and sexy and or whatever. Because even that's for guys. That's not for ladies. So what's the deal, you know? I don't know.
There's some ladies out there that like that.
True, and there's nothing wrong with that either. I'm just saying, I feel like
no,
AJ is getting slighted here for no reason.
Yeah, all right. But it's all rumors, right? So, you know, we just spent like...
It is a rumor. It is a
40
rumor.
Minutes of our hour show here debating a rumor, albeit very hilarious on my part.
Oh, man. Fine.
All right, AJ, you know I love you. I hope you stay on, too. But all right, so not quite as funny as AJ Benza, but you know, I like when there's little moments of humor at the poker table.
Right.
And I had one this week. I was out at a local card room, and we're in the middle of the tournament. A guy got there late. You would call him a kid, Chris, because you call anybody that's like younger than 50 a kid.
I know. I don't know why I do that.
But he was probably, you know, I'll give him 21 maybe, because I think he was drinking some kind of rum and coke. So I'll give him 21 maybe.
Okay.
But very young, and he comes and he sits down at the table, and he's got his a girl with him, right?
Right.
And she grabs a chair and sits like right behind him, you know, kind of like that kind of peering over the shoulder kind of thing. We've all
yeah.
seen that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he sits down, and then an older gentleman at the table looks over at him and he's like, "Hey, son, you're not married yet, are you?" And the guy goes, no, not yet, and kind of smiling. And the old guy's like, "You know what? I knew that. And you know how I knew that?" And he's like, "No, I don't." And he's like, "Because wives don't sit behind their husbands watching poker. Only girlfriends do that." And it's so true.
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
It's only these little lapdog girlfriends that are still in love with their guys that will actually sit there in the most boring thing in the world, sitting behind somebody watching them play poker for hours. No wife is going to do that.
Oh, man, that is funny.
And I'm like, yeah, the rest of us, we all got our phones on silent right now, so the wives can't even find us. But I'm bringing them to the poker room. This guy brings his girlfriend, and she's like, you know, excited to sit behind you and watch you donk off your chips with ace 10.
Oh, man, that was hilarious. Oh, man. All right, so let's move on to our Annie Up news desk.
All right. The Commerce Casino sent a non-World Series event record for most entries in a land-based tournament on September 15th when a total of 3,967 players paid $220 to enter the event, which had 3-day ones, Chris.
Jeez.
And also allowed players limited to buy back in on a later day. Moshi Mashiya, pronunciation not correct, won the event and 164,627 cocktail waitress tips.
Wow, that's a huge tournament. That's
almost 4,000.
Wow, that's insane.
But you know, hey, you had 3-day ones. You let people buy back in. You know, you're going to get a good crowd, probably.
Of course, you know, it probably was only like maybe 800 players, and they all kept rebuying on later days.
Daniel Negreanu re-entered 14 times.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, the Safe and Secure Internet Gambling Initiative says it's financing an online advertising campaign worth tens of thousands of dollars to boost U.S. Rep. Barney Frank's bill to regulate online poker. Card Player says the group will place the ad on news websites read by lawmakers, including the Washington Post and The Hill.
This isn't the first time something like this happened with the advertisement, at least. I know that it was Alphonse D'Amato said the same thing, that they were doing stuff, they were placing ads in their quarterlies that they knew everybody read, so it's probably effective. So I'm very hopeful here.
And I think they're kind of preaching the personal freedom kind of angle too, which I think plays well.
Yeah.
For folks both sides of the aisle. So we'll see where that works out. And finally, let's see if I can get through this without laughing, Chris. Brandon McSmith, a man who claims his pitch for a TV show similar to NBC's Face the Ace was rejected by Poker Productions 2 years ago, is suing for $85 million in damages. This comes from TMZ, which always has the most accurate information out there. $85 million.
Where do you think he pulled that number?
No one watches. Not even Stephen Sherpa's mom watches this show.
Where do you think he pulled that number from? $85 million.
Wow. I don't know. I wonder if, we should call up our good friend Maury at Poker Productions and ask whether he's even going to offer this guy $85.
Man,
because I'll be honest, Brandon, if you're listening, take the $85. I mean, that's probably twice as much as NBC and Poker Productions has made on this show. So
he could probably buy into the Face the Ace, you know, the sit and goes or the satellites on with that $85. And that's the only way he's going to have anything to do with this show.
$85 million. Wow. You got to love our legal system, don't you?
Yeah, unbelievable. All right, so this is the Kill Two Birds with One Stone hotline call. This comes from Brian in Tampa. The phone number is 813-448-1120. You call that number, we use the clip. Scott will give you something cool from our swag shelf. But Brian wants to know, he wants to come on the cruise, but what about his wife?
Hey, Chris and Scott, this is Brian from Tampa. Calling with a question about the Annie Up Poker Cruise that's upcoming. I'm all for it. I really want to do it, and I talked to my wife about it. And she's a little hesitant. She's kind of looking at what's in it for her. She doesn't play poker, and she's afraid that I'm just going to go on this thing for 4 days and play poker for 4 straight days, and she's never going to see me. So I need a little help convincing her on how much fun she can have on this cruise while I'm playing poker. Appreciate the insight. Love the show. Take care. Thanks.
Hi, Brian. I'm glad you called because my wife is probably even more glad you called because, I dragged her on this last cruise.
Yeah.
Chris dragged his wife on. I'm sorry. Chris's wife dragged Chris on the last cruise. I dragged my wife on. And, part of the problem with a poker cruise is you bring a bunch of poker players on and then if you want to bring their spouses that don't play, and then it kind of gets a little dicey. So we tried, Chris.
Yeah.
To have a spouse meet up the first night of the cruise so all the widows or widowers could get together and and make new friends. I went there with my wife. It was me, my wife, and some other guy. Very awkward. No one else showed up. So we tried. So I don't know whether we'll try again on the next one. But I will say this, Brian. The Royal Caribbean ship is huge. All kinds of stuff on the ship to do. So bring your wife. I'm sure she'll have a good time. Just kind of work out a kind of deal with her about when you're going to play and when you're not going to play. Be sure you give her proper attention. Go to dinner. Go to a show. Maybe hang out by the pool sometime. But, you know, you could do both, and everybody can be happy, I think. What do you think, Chris?
Well, there are a ton of functions on there, too, not just the shows and stuff. I mean, they do, you know, every single time you're on one of these, they give you the little newsletter every morning in your room, and there's a ton of stuff for her to do. And like you said, I think you need to find some time for your wife. I think that was what made this last cruise for me, you know, so much easier to take, was that, you know, I spent a lot of time with my wife going in and out of the room rather than just living in the room.
Right.
And I think if you find a happy balance, that she's going to be happy with it, and you can go on more to come besides just this one cruise. But there will be plenty of stuff for her to do, especially on Royal Caribbean. It's huge.
Yeah, yeah. And we love to, you know, pair up, like I said, widows and widowers again. So if folks have ideas on how the best we could do that, we'd love to do that, because obviously we want you on the boat, Brian, and we want your wife on the boat too. So
now, had he come on the last cruise, he would have gotten this gift that we're giving him. But since he didn't and he missed out, we feel bad. So we're going to give him a hat from Twift.com.
Right, right. If you look at our last issue, you could see some of the folks wearing these quality hats. I actually like these hats. I'm not a hat guy, but I've actually been wearing my Twift hat.
It was a quality hat. You know, usually some of the hats are so cheap when you get them because they're getting mass production of them. But these were good hats, and I appreciated them too.
Not bad. So, Brian, send us your address. We will get that Twift hat out. We will also see you on the ship, as we will everybody who is listening today. We thank you all for tacitly agreeing to come on the next ship. So all 7,000 of you, we're probably going to need a couple extra ships. So we'll work on that. But don't worry about that. Just right now, just call Mary Kolb at 727-733-3498 and give her your information, and we'll figure out a place to find to put you later on when we make the ship big enough for your demand. We're very humbled by that tremendous response from everybody out there. And since you're already coming on, you might as well go to annieupmagazine.com/cruise. And learn a little bit more about what you've just committed yourself to. We'll be looking forward to seeing you March 25th to 29th.
Oh, my God. All right, well, I'm tired of hearing your voice, so I'm going to move on to the mailbag and read it myself. It comes from Abacus.
Excellent! I love that!
Those. We've all used those before. And he wants to know if promotions change the game. And his reasoning was he had a chance to play at the Windstar Casino in Oklahoma recently, and there was a special Aces Cracked bonus going on, and I love those.
Yeah.
So, you know, the player loses a showdown with pocket aces, he wins $100, wins a rack, you know, basically is what it is.
Yep.
So at first he thought it'd be great, and his 10th hand, he picked up aces under the gun and found himself in a pot with seven limpers. You know, flop comes ace, queen, four rainbows. He's got top set. They held up, and it was a – he said he felt that was kind of amazing being at a 1-2 table.
Yeah, with seven people, absolutely.
But he made several passive moves – during this hand, because for the bonus. And if it had not been for the bonus, he wouldn't have played it that way. On the final board of ace, queen, four, queen, king, he won a pot of over $250, and one lady holding king, queen, and the other player mucked, well, whatever that was. But the lady obviously tilted, and she would have paraded his play had it not been for the promotion.
Mm-hmm.
So at that, you know, at that point, he realizes, you know, each decision I made while the bonus was paying out should include, is my opponent slow playing aces? So now he's wondering, you know, do you think promotions like this and the 7-2 offsuit bonus, I guess there's one of those on Ultimate Bet, he wants to know if it adds something to the game with Nolan Hold'em, or does it change the style of play so much that it compromises the skills honed by experienced players, making it more of a crapshoot? What do you think?
It absolutely changes the game, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to say it changes it for the worse, it just changes it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Some people, obviously, I mean, if you call me up and say, or write me and say, oh my God, it does change for the worse, I'm not going to disagree with you, because it's all an opinion. But it definitely changes it. If I know, almost all these promotions have a minimum pot size, too.
Yeah.
So you're going to, you know, kind of slow play a little bit to be sure that pot gets up there. So that changes the action. And then, two, it encourages people to play hands that they may not normally play, or play them differently. to try to win. I mean, I know one of the great things I like is going out to Tampa Bay Downs. They do this 599 high hand every half hour thing a couple times a year.
Yep.
And they include Omaha high-low in it, which is beautiful. And you could see people. There's like 10 people in the pot every time because Omaha, there's so many different combinations. So I think, you know, what I do is I kind of adjust my game to the promotion.
Yeah.
Rather than play for the 599 high hand, I tighten up and play a lot more properly, knowing that everybody else is playing crazy stuff.
Right.
And I end up making more money that way. So I think that's the thing. Yes, it does change it, but if you're a good player, you'll know how to adjust your play to accommodate that, I think.
And here's the other thing, though. Like, and in his case, the $100 ace is cracked. Depends on your own stack. You know, if you got 50 bucks and you shove, you'd love to shove with aces and hope they get cracked because you're going to win 100 bucks guaranteed and at least double your stack. So, but if you got 300, if you got 300 in front of you, that's when you're like, yay, okay, I lost 300, but I won 100 back. I still lost 200. So you got to be careful the way you play it. So there you go, right there. You're not playing the way you normally would optimally. So I agree with you. I think that you need to take all things into consideration and not just the actual promotion itself. And, yeah, I 100% agree. It does change the game. Some cases for the better, some cases not. So I even like sometimes in the home game we'll put that seven deuce game in, you know, and if you win with seven deuce, everybody has to pay you a buck or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's crazy. It's a crazy game. It just totally changes it. And it's not like, oh, does this guy have aces now? You're wondering if he has seven deuce, and you would never think that in a normal game. So it just totally changes everything. So I don't know. Promotions are interesting. You know, we did the same thing we played in the hoe game. You know, I was playing all kinds of Omaha hands. Because I wanted to try to win the $5.99 when we were
right. Yeah,
we had
high
the special
hand.
Going down to Sarasota. Yeah, so it does change it.
Yep. All right, well, one thing that doesn't change, Abacus, is by sending us a mailbag, we send you swag. And so be sure to send us your address. And you're going to win today a $10 staking package from getastake.com. You have to use that online, so hopefully you're an online player. But check it out at getastake.com.
All right, so last week, our Ride Along with Columbo, the one-minute mystery spinoff, was part 10. Blinds were 120 and 240, and there's $25 antes. We had a stack of 8,500. The under-the-gun player folded, which means the first player to act folded. And we looked down at two aces, ace of clubs, ace of spades, in the next seat. So how did we want to play it, Scott?
Well, you know, depending on how well my opponents know me, I'll bet a little bit more than 3x here to make it look like a small pair that doesn't want to call. But, you know, if they know me well, I'm going to stick to the standard 3x to conceal my hand. I don't want to give away anything here. You know, one of the cool things about this ride along with Columbo thing is that we're supposed to be paying attention to how the hands come together and how our other players. And I admit I'm kind of a little bit lost on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's what I'm going to say. So, you know, I'll get a little trickier if my opponents know me, but if they don't know me, then I'm going to do the standard X.
Well, I can't recall in the, you know, not 10 weeks prior, any maniacs that significant to my left in this tournament, or at least now at this table. So I'll just do the same thing as you. I'll do a 3X raise here. If I had a maniac on my left that I knew liked to do it, then I might do the limp or the min raise or something like that. But I won't disguise my hand at all if it's just a standard, you know, pretty much ABC next to me. So I'm making it 3X here.
Okay. We went to the forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum to see what folks there said. And again, it's a little boring. There's a consensus. anywhere between a 2.5 to 4X raise. Which all kinds of makes sense. It's all in the same range, I think. But I think for the most part, people wanted to conceal their hand.
All right, so we'll see if the result is as boring as we are. And then we'll hear part 11.
Greetings, this is Columbo at PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and welcome to episode 11 of Ride Along with Columbo. I dug myself a hole early in this tournament, playing hands errantly, so I'm not going to screw around this time. With ace-ace in early position, I'm going to raise it up to about 650, which is slightly light, but I've been active and showing down big hands and expect to win nothing but the blinds anyway with a raise. I know I should normally stay standard to make sure there are no reads, but that seems unnecessary at this table, based on the history. Nevertheless, they all fold and the episode ends prematurely. But I need to remember what happened here, as it might be relevant later. Ah, table break.
I could kick myself.
Well, welcome to our new table. The level is now 150,325. I have about 8,500 in chips, and average is about 8,000. Because I just spent some time folding at my new table and trying to minimize chip loss while I figure out who these guys are. It folds all the way around to the button, who shoves with 5,200. Small blind folds, and you're facing a heads-up call with 9 of clubs, 10 of clubs in the big blind. So what do you think? Is this a good place to take a shot at a big chip-up with a call?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
We've had Lon McCarron and Norman Chad on the show before to give us their take on how a TV poker show comes together, but you know, and I know that obviously their important involvement on ESPN's broadcast comes at the very end of a very long process that includes hundreds of crew members. But today's guest is at the forefront of the entire process, and he's going to give us the nitty-gritty on how a regional poker show gets from the event to our TVs with a much, much smaller crew. The Windy City Poker Championship is doing very well in the ratings in Chicago, and soon will be seen here in Florida, too. Joining us today is its creator, Kirk Falla.
Hey, guys.
Kirk,
how are you?
How you doing, man?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great. Well, you know, you and I have been talking a long time about what you're doing up there with the Windy City Poker Championship, but obviously our listeners don't know all about that. So fill us in. What is the Windy City Poker Championship, and how did it all get started?
Well, about 6 years ago, I came up with the idea of putting together a television show that broadcasts charity poker events because I'd been inspired by ESPN's coverage, the World Poker Tour. And so I'm 23 years old, I'm in college, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, I have no business sense whatsoever, I'm running around Chicago trying to find out how to make this happen, nobody's interested, I can't get the budgets working, so I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to finish college, start doing my video production, see where it goes, and about, a little over a year ago, my business partner and I, we started to look at the concept again and see where it would take us, and with poker becoming so huge since then, you know, it just jumped off. We got involved with Main Event Charity Games. They organize wonderful charity events. And I struck a deal with Comcast Sports in Chicago, started to find some local sponsors, and started the Windy City Poker Championship. It's basically a poker television show from Chicago. It's based out of charity events in the city of Chicago, and it's got a lot of fun elements involved in it. You see the full hands. You get breakdowns of the poker hands. You know, it's not just 7 hands in one show, but it's not like all in fold. You know, it's real poker as if you're sitting right there watching the action from Chicago.
Man, that's awesome. Now, you know, yeah. Scott had brought up in the intro about the ratings and how it's doing very well, and you brought up Comcast. Now you're in the Chicago area, and apparently this show beats out other poker shows as well. What do the fans love most about your show, and why does it do so well there?
Well, the show itself is in 5 states. It broadcasts to more than 7.3 million households on the Chicago Comcast Sportsnet network. And because of the fact that it's a local program, a lot of the people in the area that watch it, they look at it and see, hey, that could be me. You know, that it's not a $10,000 buy-in. You know, there's a crowd of 70-some-odd people playing, and you have a 1 in 10 chance of making it to a televised table. So when they look at that, they love the aspect of that could be me. That could easily be me. They also love the fact, it's the real nitty-gritty. We show about 98% of the hands. If there's a one hand that's just completely ridiculous, that is like, I'm not putting that in program, that's the one hand that'll go away. But otherwise, we have all the hands. It develops from the beginning to the end. You see, you hear the reaction from the players at the table, and we're not taking out any of the elements. So it's, like I said before, it's like you're actually there watching Deep Stack, No Limit Texas Hold'em.
Now, Kirk, one of the unique things about your production is that you're an adjunct professor at Columbia College Chicago, and you use students on your crew, right?
Yes, that's correct.
How's that work?
Well, one of the things I wanted to do when I started this production is that I teach at Columbia College Chicago. I started teaching in 2005, and I have a lot of talented students that I have worked with and or taught to become great TV people. And when they graduate, it's very, very tough in the Chicago market to get a job, either on air or off air, behind the scenes, editing, stuff like that. And all these students are very talented and very hungry. So when I'm sitting here thinking about it, who would I hire to do my production? Who can I trust to do my lighting? Who can I pay to do all this? Because obviously people are going to want to get paid to do a television production. I'm like, I got to incorporate my students. And so every single production that I've done has involved Columbia College Chicago students, both current and former. And in fact, the next show that airs in Chicago was directed by a 19-year-old student who can't even go into a bar yet. And he is beyond excited because that show is going to air to more than 9 million households when it's all said and done. Almost 20 million people could potentially see a show that he directed. As a teacher, that makes me very proud to see his good work. And as a boss, it makes me very happy because he was kicking butt for about 12 hours putting that show together.
Man. Well, speaking of people that you work with on the show, one of our Antiup Nationals, Chicago Jason, as we affectionately call him, he's your co-host, Jason Finn. What's it like working with him, and what kind of chemistry do you guys have?
Well, Jason and I have a great chemistry. The original co-host was Michael Lapidus. He's a good friend of mine that I've known for a long time. Michael recently started up a barbecue joint, so his time has been less and less since. And so Jason is taking the reins for him for the next two programs. And his knowledge of poker is just beyond anything that I've ever experienced so far. And what he brings to the show is the extra little things that I have yet to learn as a poker player and as a poker host that the people at home might not realize. Terms, situations, betting patterns, you know, tells. He realized a couple tells on two of the players that, you know, I had not noticed yet myself. And so people at home watching will look at it and say, you know what, that's right. Every time he tilts his head, he puts in a raise, he's got a good hand. And these are things that he is showing the audience at home, which is in turn going to help them become better poker players because now they're going to notice those smaller things. So Jason Finn does a wonderful job as an announcer, and I'm excited to continue to work with him from here on.
Well, Kirk, TV production isn't cheap, as we all know. Aside from the crew. Exactly. Aside from the crew, what are some of the other big expenses?
Well, guys, the post-production process is probably the most expensive part about it. It takes about 2 to 3 weeks for us to put a show together from production to broadcast. A lot of these other poker shows, it's like 5, 6, 7, 8 months. What I like to do is that once the show is done, my crew is watching the program, they're logging the footage, they're getting ready for the broadcast, and that's where most of the man hours go into because you're sitting there, you're going over all the hands trying to figure out what was the action, what was the bet, what's the graphic supposed to say, what are the hands involved, do we put this hand, do we put that hand? And I'd say that that's the most expensive part about the show, other than the high-definition equipment that we do use for the production, but it's the post-production that's the real, real difficult part about the show.
And do you have, like, hole cams and things like that, or is there a different way to have somebody there sitting behind them recording the hands? How does that work out for you guys because it's such a small production?
Well, what we started out doing is that I had a few hole cams so that we had that element, not only for sponsorship capabilities, but people are so used to seeing the hole card cam. And we do have somebody that actually logs the hands. Every single hand, when players fold, the cards go to the left side, out of the view of any of the players, and somebody is sitting there writing down player one's hand has XYZ and vice versa, so that when it's time for post-production, I know every single hand that has transpired during the actual production. Once it gets down to like, you know, 4, 3, 2 people, you start not to notice that you're not using the pocket camera for everybody because you can't. It's people at home don't realize that while you're watching other poker shows, they do have 7 or 8 pocket cameras there, but they don't always use it. So that is what the viewer is used to, and so when it was coming for our production, having 2 or 3 pocket cameras still made it feel like you had 6 there. But to make sure we knew what the hands were, I still have somebody that's sitting there actually logging the hands as we play.
Excellent. All right, well, let's take us on a tour here of how an episode comes together from you know, conception of it to actually shooting it to production to actually showing up on the air. What's the process like?
Well, basically, I'm very casual when it comes to my work. I like to have fun. I like to enjoy things. I like to make sure my crew has fun because the more fun they have, the easier it's going to be. So once I know of a specific broadcast date, I kind of plan ahead and figure, okay, it's going to take me about 2 to 3 weeks to put it together. we need to tape it by this time. I need to hire my crew by this time. I need to talk to Main Event Charity Games, make sure we have a venue, a location, a charity. So step one is to get a venue, get a charity, and make sure that Main Event has got a scheduled event for that weekend. Then I'll hire the crew. I'll make sure we got all the equipment. We'll come in that Saturday when the production happens early, about noon. We'll start setting up. It'll take about 6 hours to light the set, get the table, get the cameras all set. And at the same time, the event is actually going on. The poker tournament starts about 2 o'clock. So we've got about 4 or 5 hours to put together an entire set from head to toe. We walk into an empty room, and then 5 hours later, boom, we've got an entire production set. Then when it gets down to 7 players, we take a half-hour break. We do questions and answers with them, pre-interviews, sit down, tape the entire show, which probably takes about an hour to an hour and a half. And then when the production's done, we tear down the set, and we're out of there by 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going straight home to start capturing the footage into my home system before I take it to the office. And then 2 to 3 weeks later, we're ready for broadcast.
Wow. Now, you talked about taking the footage home and uploading it. And now, Scott and I are print journalists, but I've also worked with some media stuff like that. And I've had the situations where, like, my computer will crash, and I'll lose my entire story, or I'll lose my entire video footage. Has anything like that ever happened to you? And you know, are you able to laugh about it now?
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're on a PC or if you're on a Mac, you're going to lose your stuff one of these days. And I learned the hard way about 8 years ago when I was editing my first big project. I was getting about $1,000 to put together this wedding video, and I had one hard drive on my home system at the time, and it just crashed on me. So I had to recapture, re-edit the entire thing. It took me about 60 hours, and I learned from that time, this is going to sound like a bad rap song, but you got to back it up. You got to back up your stuff. It doesn't matter how redundant you're going to be. I've had 2 backup hard drives for major projects before. It's an extra, $100 to get a 500 gig hard drive. Just take that expense and back your stuff up, because if you get an electrical surge or if a corrupt file happens, all of a sudden you got to do the whole project again. But I learned my lesson, and since then I've had no problems. Thank God. Back it up,
all right. All right, well, you mentioned how your crew looks at the whole cards. That saves a little bit of expense. Is there other kind of cost-saving things that you do? Obviously, you don't have the big budget as ESPN where they can come in and do whatever the heck they want. You got to kind of keep mind the dollars and cents a little bit. So what kind of stuff do you do to...
Well, the main thing I do is that I'm a host, and I'm cheap labor. So if I were to get paid for hosting the show, I might be looking at $1 million a show. But since I don't charge my own production, that's where we save the money. Other locations, it's just like I said, you know, hiring talented people where you don't have to redo something. You know, if you're sitting there with a crew of 5 people, when you could have a crew of 8 people, and that crew of 5 is going to do just as good, if not better, than that crew of 8. You know, then I have extra money, so I can give bonuses in case we're there for a little bit extra and everything like that. But I'd say that's the main thing. I'm worth $1 million a show, but I'll start getting paid maybe next year.
What does Jason charge you? He's probably 1.5 mil then, right?
Well, Jason just comes and steals my food. He raids my fridge and eats all my peanut butter and jelly. That man has a weird thing for peanut butter and jelly. I don't know why, but he just does. Wheat bread. Got to be wheat bread. It's healthy.
Well, obviously you're not charging yourself $1 million, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to strike a deal with Bright House Sports Network here in Florida. They're going to be airing your Windy City Poker Championship, and you're working on some other deals that are similar to this around the country. What's your goal in mind for airing these regional poker shows all over the place?
Well, the show, it's based in Chicago. It promotes Chicago charities, and you get a lot of Chicago players, but it doesn't mean the show has to stay broadcasting in the Chicago area. It's a very fun, exciting show. You always see shows from, you know, Las Vegas, or you see them from Canada, but it doesn't mean that other players from the area can't participate in the event. It doesn't mean that this show can't be videotaped in a different state. You know, we're talking about coming down to Florida with you guys to start a television show, and, you know, the quality of the content and the quality of the production, in my opinion, dictates whether or not a poker show can be successful. And I don't cut any quarters from the quality standpoint. I make sure that all the information on the screen, all the stuff that you're seeing. It looks good. It sounds good. It flows good. I make sure that the production value is high. I shoot everything in high definition. I could sit there and shoot it in standard definition widescreen and try to pass it off as high def. No. I'm going to take that extra step because I want that quality. When you see it on your TV at home, if you got a 65-inch plasma TV at home, bam, there's my beautiful face in high definition. Bam, there's the beautiful whole cards in high definition. That's the stuff that makes a poker show successful, which is why Poker After Dark, you know, Face the Ace, all those shows do so well, because when you look at them, the content is great, but the quality of the production and the lighting and the sets are phenomenal. And my next show at the location at Chief O'Neill's, the upstairs location we shot at looks exactly like a Poker After Dark set. And when the 19-year-old was lighting that set, I'm sitting there going, oh, baby, I love it. I cannot wait for this to be on television in high definition. So that's where the goal is for the show. I want to take this show nationwide. I want to get this in every single house I can in the United States of America and beyond. And we're only a few steps away from doing that now with striking new deals with new networks, because they want the show because they like the show, and the show's quality is that good. That's why they're picking it up.
And plus, you're doing all the production for them and just handing it over to them. So I mean, that
exactly.
Does
it's cheap. Yeah, hit play. All you got to do is hit play, buddy.
Now, have you ever thought about doing one of the questions we always ask TV folks when they're on the show is, the possibility of games other than No Limit Texas Hold'em making it on TV. Have you ever thought about doing those, and does it add anything to the production complication or anything like that?
I do want to consider doing Omaha and some horse events, but the one thing that I noticed from watching the World Series of Poker a few years ago is that when they had those different types of events on there, people who aren't used to it didn't quite understand, and I actually could tell you're tripling your actual graphic elements of the program when you're doing Omaha. You have so many more things to think about. So if it takes you 4 hours to do the all the graphical elements for No Limit Poker Show that people understand already, or at least somewhat understand, if you're tripling that, now you're up to 12 hours. So the production budget of it is going to increase. You got to make sure that you're explaining it correctly for somebody, because when I used to do news, I was a news reporter for KOMU and NBC when I was down at school in University of Missouri. You had to write for a five-year-old. Even though you're writing to people who are 25, 30 that can understand you, you want to write your script so that a five-year-old could understand. And I feel that to do other shows like Omaha shows or Horse, or Raz or stuff like that, you have to make sure that the people understand it before you do a show like that. Otherwise, you're not going to get the good ratings that you need to be able to afford the production to sell the sponsors. So I think that now that Omaha is starting to pick up in popularity, in maybe like 2, 3, 4 years, once it's really starting to creep up there to No Limit Hold'em, you're going to start to see a lot more televised poker shows with other poker events as the main focus. And so that's definitely something that I've got, in my back pocket that I'm thinking about, in season 5, trying to do something a little bit different, because everybody's doing No Limit, by then. Maybe it's time to start trying to do Omaha.
Yeah, and Omaha is always, we always say it, it's a natural progression. It's the same game essentially, so. And it really won't require you to do anything special other than just put 4 cards up. So that's really a natural progression for you guys.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. So it's like, oh, we get 4 cards now? Sweet. I just got to have 4 aces. I win. No. You can only use 2 cards, buddy. I got 6 pair. No, you don't.
I always try to win a 6 pair. Chris never lets me.
I think 3 pairs should count in some circumstances, especially in home games. If you got 3 pair, it should be a straight.
Don't let my mom hear that.
But baby, he said it was okay.
All right, Kirk, we'll let you go here soon. But the last question, obviously, you mentioned that you're working with us to kind of get a Florida poker show on the air. And I know Chris and I are real excited about that. We're hoping we can make that happen here pretty soon. What do you think of the Florida poker market from all the way up there in Chicago and where it might be headed?
Well, guys, I believe that the Florida market is very, very strong from a poker community sense. I have a lot of friends that live down there, that have played poker down there, and you guys, you're even represented in the November 9. So when we were talking about putting a show together, I'm excited about the opportunity, because I know that when we start traveling around the state of Florida, meeting players, going to events, and putting it on television that we're going to get a lot of followers that are going to really make that show a strong show. And especially with you guys, you know, being the on-camera talent, you know, from your podcast to your magazine articles and now onto television, you know, that's your natural progression. Just like No Limit to Omaha, your natural progression is the next step is to become TV stars. Forget this C-list stuff. I want to make you A-list celebrities.
Well, I appreciate you've already put us above Kathy Griffin.
Yeah. You got her. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. All right, Kirk. Well, hey, we appreciate you a lot. We know you got to get back. You got a lot of editing to do to make city stuff look good, and we don't want
to. I got to go try to win this weekend. I've got a weekend off. I'm going to go try to play in a deep stack tournament and win maybe
$10.
Awesome. You know, I'll just get away.
All right, so Kirk, let everybody know what website and what TV channel and stuff to catch it if they're in the Chicago market.
If you're in the Chicago market, you can watch the show on Comcast Sportsnet Chicago. Check your local listings for times and dates. If you'd like to sign up for a future event, you can log on to maineventcharitygames.com, click on the calendar icon, and you can see our next event, which is scheduled potentially for December 18th. We're going to talk to you guys more about that in the coming months. If you want to see episodes of the program, you can log on to WindyCityPokerChampionship.com to see full-length episodes, or YouTube, anywhere in the world. My grandma can watch it overseas. I love it.
All right, thanks a lot, Kirk. We appreciate it, and we'll chat with you soon.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Once again, Chris, we welcome our good friend Lee Childs to the show. Lee made the final table of the World Series main event a couple years ago, and then went ahead and founded AcumenPoker.net, where he is the lead instructor and is one of the great new pros at Lock Poker. Lee, thanks for having. Oh my God! I was just gonna say thanks for letting me not screw up the intro.
I think you're sandbagging us. I think you like intentionally screwed up now, because no human being can make this many mistakes and still walk upright.
Well, welcome, Scott. Glad to have you on the show, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Lee. I appreciate you inviting me back. but no, Lee, it's always good to have you. And we've got a very, very special hand of the week. I like to use that from the very, very special episode of Family Ties, you know, when it ends up being not special at all, just kind of funny.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, I don't want to – I'm going to be piling on our good friend who sent the hand of the week in. And it's not because I don't like him. It's because he's from Michigan, and I'm contractually obligated as a born Buckeye to always totally brutalize anybody from Michigan when I get the chance. And I think our hero today, Jonathan from West Bloomfield, Michigan, may give us that opportunity, Chris.
I think he will give you the opportunity.
All right, here we go. He is playing in a free roll on PokerStars, where we know the play is the absolute best play you'll ever find in an online free roll. And we are at level 2040. Chip stacks are about 2,200, about 5,000, about 10,000, 3,000. We got a short stack of 500, 1,700. Our hero has 4,600. And another player is 4,016. So all over the map, I guess, is the best way of saying it. But the big stack at the table is 10,000. The low stack is 543. So we're at 2040 level. There's an $8 ante at this point. And we have a caller. We have a 3x raiser to 120. We are in the cutoff after a couple of folds with 5 of spades, 7 of diamonds. Do I need to ask someone to start? Because I will if I have to.
Can we fold and give him the prize now and make it the shortest hand of the week ever?
I mean, we can't yet brutalize this Wolverine yet. So,
well, if we have to play this hand, I can't raise with it, I don't think. what obligation do we have to play this hand? I don't know, but the choices are fold or call. Why are we playing this hand?
I'll tell you why, Chris.
Why?
Oh, thank you, Lee.
because we're making a mistake. No, I personally, we're actually on the button, I believe, and I like the cutoff and the button. I really like seeing lots of flop in position with these suited connectors and suited, and unsuited one gappers, things like that, suited and non-suited. And with what I don't really like is that there's been an early position limp and then a raise, but the guy's only raised to 120, so we can get in for much less than 5% of our stack. And to have the power of seeing a flop in position with these little connector cards, you know, you're unlikely to be in the same range as these other players. Of course, you know nothing about this first limper, but if you call here, maybe you do induce the blinds to call sometimes. But if the risk you run is because you have an early position limper and then this guy raises, so you're not closing the betting. And you're not just calling, if the first guy had raised and then one guy called, then I'm going to call here a lot of times because it's such a small percentage of my stack. So I don't really like that there's been a limper and then a raise, but I do like just calling in position with these, suited and non-suited, no gaps and one gaps.
Yeah, you know what? You sound like a used car salesman. I mean, 9 times out of 10, we come to you and say, so I'm in the cutoff with 5-7 off, and a guy raises pretty early in position. So I call. I mean, you're going to laugh at us. So, I think this is really a bad, bad call.
No, it's actually, you'd be surprised. When it's such a small percentage, I mean, if you look at their stacks, the original limper has about 5,000. And the other guy has about 3,000. So really, anything up to about, and we have 4,600. So the relative chip stack here, the effective chip stack is about 3,000 because that's the smaller of all of my opponents. We don't count the blind who's got about 1,600 because he hasn't acted yet. So with him having 3,000, we can profitably call with these kind of hands for up to 150 chips. Okay. Because we can do it for 5% of your stack or less. Now, I do prefer them to be suited. When you play them as the suited connectors, you have an opportunity to actually flop a 15 out draw where you're a favorite. Yeah. When you play these unsuited connectors, you're looking at these 8 out type draws, and you're not going to be a favorite, and you're almost never going to have the right odds to draw. But as long as you're getting in for 5% or less of the effective chip stack, then you've got the right implied odds to be able to play these kinds of hands and to play them from the cutoff and button. I mean, I play these kind of hands in tournaments all day long when the effective chip stacks are deep enough like they are right here.
And because I have already predetermined that I'm going to make fun of this Wolverine, I am going to give him a little love here and say, remember, it's a free roll too.
Yeah.
So if you... kind of, if you hit two pair or something on this hand, you're probably going to stack somebody, I would think, because people are going to go crazy with top pair.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
In a free roll.
I lost sight of the fact that it was a free roll, too, so, yeah. A lot of hands can be out there, too.
All right, so that's the only compliment I'm giving to GLC Geek here, so so enjoy it, buddy. All right, so let's get back to the hand here. We have another caller, and then the small blind calls, big blind gets out of the way, and the initial limper calls.
So you're saying the button called now?
We are the button. I was incorrect. I know it does not happen often. I apologize to the nation for messing up the hand of the week. It will not happen again until next week.
All right, so if we're the button, and you said we had another caller and the small blind.
No, the small blind called, big blind gets out of the way, okay. The limper calls.
All right, cool.
All right, we all straight now?
Now we're all four-handed, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Flop is 9 of hearts, 9 of spades, 8 of hearts. Small blind checks, the initial limper checks, the initial raiser bets $200, and we, of course, fold, right?
Fold, and talk to you guys next week.
Oh, no, but the stack size is really, I mean,
yes.
the implied odds if I hit my gutter is totally worth calling here. It's only 200 out of my 4,600 flop, so really it's not even 10% of 5% of my stack. So I'm calling, hoping to hit the gutter and felting this guy in a free roll.
So So our 5% rule is one that we use pre-flop, Chris. Yeah. And now, yes, we fed our gutter on a paired board with two hearts. We have no hearts. We just fold. We're looking to flop two pair or better, and we didn't, so we fold. And that way, we have played this hand profitably over time.
Well, we could turn a 7 and have two pair, so I, of course I'm being facetious. I fold right. And run screaming for the door because I shouldn't have called in the first place.
All right, well, that would not be a good hand of the week if our hero folded. So he's got a call here. Small blind gets out of the way. The limper calls, and now we are three-handed to the turn, which brings a 7 of spades.
There it is. We got our two pair. It was worth playing.
Ship it.
Put it all in.
All right. The board now is 9 of hearts, 9 of spades, 8 of hearts, 7 of spades. First player checks. The guy who's been leading out the entire time for bets of 120 and 200 bets 40 this time.
40.
Now, with our monster, Chris, take us home with this bad boy.
Oh, yeah. We're going to make it 1,200 to go. All right, I'll call the 40.
But, you know, all right, we're laughing here, but this is stuff you see every day and 7 times on Sunday in free rolls.
Yeah, I know.
It's why you
can't just free rolls.
I know. It's true. I've seen it. I saw it this week.
I mean, you just can't make this stuff up. This guy is firing these big bets out. Now all of a sudden he's betting the minimum. And, you know, we have two people in here. One of them with, you know, bottom pair now.
I'm still just calling because I was going to get away from this hand. So I'm not raising here. I'm just calling and hoping maybe I still hit a gutter or another 9 comes or a 7 or something. And even then I'm not betting too much.
Yeah, once we've gotten this far, I guess we call it. Let's not forget we still have one other player in the hand too. But if I've already put in all this into the pot, it's only 40 into a pot of almost 1,200. I think you got to call now.
300 to 1 on your money. Or 30 to 1 on your money, whatever it is, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right, our hero min raises to 80.
I don't want to open the betting up again. Just call and hope the guy behind you folds or calls too.
Well, you know, remember the betting is still open. We still got this other player in. I mean, obviously you're right. You know, by just calling, you take it away from the initial 40.
That's what I mean. The initial 40.
You did better. wow. Okay. So we min raised to 80. The guy who checked now check raises an extra 320 on top to 400.
Yeah.
Well, this is our first limper, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We have heard nothing from the entire hand. Now all of a sudden he's very excited. The initial bettor calls the 360. Now it gets to us.
Can we fold again? Can we go back in time? and fold preflop again? Or, you know, we got to fold now.
Chris's third fold.
I know. I folded 3 times in one hand.
The third betting round, and it's his third fold. It's my second fold.
Oh, man. Well, I'm pretty sure this is one of those very popular PokerStars free rolls where you're not allowed to fold.
No fold button.
Yeah, no fold button. And our hero calls. We see the river. It is the 7 of hearts.
Oh, no.
7 of hearts. Chris is very excited now.
Oh, no.
Our final board is 9 of hearts, 9 of spades, 8 of hearts, 7 of spades, 7 of hearts.
Well,
we have a boat, gentlemen.
The straight flush got there, though, so I'm folding.
All right, so our quiet player who woke up on the last street bets out 3,520 units.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, you're beat. And if you're not beat, who cares? Play the next hand.
The guy who's been leading the action gets out of the way, so it's up to us to keep this guy honest.
Yeah, and have 100 bucks left. And a 20-40 limit. Yeah, I got to fold.
Yeah.
For the fourth time in this hand.
Yeah, the fourth time. We got four folds out of Chris. One on every street.
Man. You know, it is kind of funny, though. Chris said for 40, you know, he called to see if he maybe hit your gutter or a 7. And now you actually hit your 2 7s.
I know.
But now you got a full. But you're right. There's just no, like, this guy, this guy's got to have a 9 or pocket 8s or, I don't know. He's
yeah, we're dead.
He didn't check raise us there with a 7 and then fire out this much into two players with just another 7.
The only thing, the only hand that you could beat that is a legitimate hand is a Jack 10, because he limped under the gun and it was open ended on the flop.
Jack 10, very good.
But
true.
But really, it's not worth 3,500 with the ass end of a, you know, of a boat. Nah, I still fold.
All right, well, we don't need to continue to debate this the rest of the night, because our hero does call. The villain chose Queen of Spades, 9 of Diamonds.
Yeah.
Of course, he's got the bigger boat. So, you know, I didn't pick this hand necessarily to pick on my good friend from Michigan, but it, more to have a kind of a discussion about this is the kind of play, not just from our hero, but from other players in this hand, that we're bound to find in free rolls online, and as Lee said, not even in free rolls.
Yeah,
crickets.
The silence is the silence means agreement. I think
this is a thing where CLC Geek had an opportunity, and I know Chris didn't like the original call pre-flop, and I didn't love it as much because there was already a limp and then a raise, and there was the early position limper. But you know, I do like seeing the flops in position when I'm getting the right price to do so. So it's, you know, that's not an awful mistake by any stretch. But what he did here was he called with a great implied odds type of hand that could bust a big hand, but then fell victim to the reverse implied odds and ended up stacking off. You know, when you play these hands and you play it for two pair or better, you know, yeah, sure, sometimes you're going to lose. Somebody's going to actually make a better hand, and you may play the 5-7, and it comes king 5-7, and they had pocket kings, and that's just going to be unlucky. But you're also going to have those, you know, king 5-7 flops where they have ace king, and you're going to stack your opponent who can't get rid of top pair. And so that's the value in those hands. And here he just, you know, he did not hit the hand that he was looking for. He flopped a gut shot with on a paired board with two hearts on the board, and he had no hearts. So it was just not a hand that he should continue with. So he took a profitable situation, getting in for less than 5% of his stack pre-flop in position, and which was profitable for him long term, and he turned it into an unprofitable situation by continuing to chase and then ultimately calling. You know, even if he had just called on the turn when that guy who's the guy with the queen nine Moosey there had raised, like, then you have to get away from it on the 9-9-8-7 board, two hearts, two spades, and all you have is a 7. Chris jokingly said we had two pair. You know, we don't have two pair. We have a pair of 7s. And it's important in No Limit Hold'em to recognize that it's not a two-pair kind of hand. If there was a 5 and a 7 on the board, then we'd have two pair. So, that was the time to definitely get away from it. You know, certainly not min-raise to 80 when the guy bets 40, but then Once that guy check raises into both of you, I think he's clearly got a made hand. And then, you know, don't give them the satisfaction of paying them off when you make a, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth best hand here.
Is it possible for me to fold a fifth time now?
You want me to look? Yeah, actually, yeah, okay. It's a little known corollary in the Faber College handbook.
Thank you.
That does allow you to fold 5 times in one hand.
Then I just did.
Hey, at least he didn't raise, though, on the end.
Yeah. Very good point.
Still got 10 big blinds and ready to go.
Yeah, that's right. He probably came back and won this thing.
Yeah, probably did.
But he did win something, Jonathan. We appreciate you sending us in and letting us talk about it. And we're going to send you a lovely set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards, some great pokerhands.com. Those will be in the mail soon to you. Those of you else out there who have a hand, or whether it's in a free roll or not, be sure to email to us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And we just might be lucky enough to entice Lee Childs back to help us with that and in the future.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
How could it be possible that he won something? Because he's from Michigan. Michigan. People from Michigan don't win anything.
Well, see, like I said, I only piled onto him as much as I legally could. So,
well, I had to help
I'm
you
passing
out
it off onto you there, and I appreciate the assist there, buddy. Lee, once again, thanks a lot. Hopefully we'll see you back here very soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right, another good show. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
And apparently the result falls right in all these other categories. He raised it to 650, which is basically, you know, almost 3X, but with the antis out there, you know, it's a little less than that for the pot. But made 650 and took the pot down. Nobody contested him. So, you know, that's the way it goes, right?
All right, so...
Oh, we play the part, though. Okay.
Yeah, you can just cut that whole little thing out there.
When
little
we
orphan
never,
Annie.
We never say anything about the result ever, huh?
No, we don't. Yeah. But I put that on there for you. Put that in the forum. Sorry, buddy.
That's right. Oh, shit. I got to put this at the end of the show. All right.